into right field. Back it goes, and it is out of here. There you go. Somebody find that baseball for Nick Prado. His third major league hit, his first major league home run. In the air to left field for Kirk. Olivar is back at the track. Kirk has done it. On 3-2, he ships it out. And the Blue Jays All-Star makes it 4-2 in the eighth.
And the Royals, you could say shorthanded, but I don't know. There's a lot of Royals fans right now. They're saying, you know what? Those kids did pretty good playing a team that's in the playoff race. Pushed them 3 of the 4 games, nearly won 2 or 3 of the four, won the first game. They're right there, but the Royals do lose yesterday 4-2 in Canada to Toronto without 10 of their players for the fourth straight game. And the Royals lose the series 3-1. Nick Prado's first career home run. He's rewarded by being demoted today. More on that in a moment. Also, you heard the Kirk home run. That was the dagger off of Wade Mills, or Wyatt Mills, I should say, as Chris Bubich was outstanding. No decision, pitched 7 scoreless, so he did his job. And as we mentioned, Nick Prado, along with the 8 players that came up to the big leagues this week, went back to Omaha. 2 others are optioned to Northwest Arkansas. And it is official just minutes ago. The Royals putting out there on social media, they have reinstated the following players from the restricted list. And, of course, that would be Andrew Benintendi, Dylan Coleman, Hunter Dozier, Cam Gallagher, Kyle Isbell, Brad Keller, MJ Melendez, Whit Merrifield, Brady Singer, and Michael A. Taylor. So they will all be in the clubhouse, as we expected. No surprise there. When the All-Star break ends and the Royals go back to action, the Royals are 36-56 going into the break. And there are a lot of Royals fans that aren't like diehard Royals fans because they don't understand how the system works. Like, you just don't cut 10 players because they didn't take a shot. There's repercussions with the union. There'd also, of course, you got the salary situation and the money. And also, you got to look at options that players have, both in the minors and, of course, most of these guys. Well, some of these younger guys, like MJ Melendez, he has an option. I don't think Royals fans are clamoring for MJ Melendez to be sent down.
No.
So I think it's convenient.
That it is selective, isn't it?
It is selective. Like, Royals fans, like, we don't need these 10 players. Do you know that MJ Melendez is one of those 10? Oh, well, on second thought, wait a minute. No. You need to treat Whit and MJ Melendez the same way from the standpoint of, you know, if you're going to reinstate MJ Melendez, you should be reinstating Whit Merrifield off the restricted list. Of course you do. Brady Singer, you know, he's a younger pitcher. I think we want him on the team. I believe that we want Andrew Benintendi to come back and rake so that he does great to where the Royals can get a real good haul for him in a trade. We want Michael A. Taylor to be back and healthy and hopefully not pitch again, even though he did it better than some Royals relievers this year. So, you know, this is no big surprise. And Royals fans, some of them talking about just cut them, leave these guys up. Well, if you leave these guys up, you have to cut these guys because Whit Merrifield's out of options, okay? Michael A. Taylor's not going to the minors. You'd have to release him and then re-sign him and then assign him possibly to the minors. So it's not as easy as some people make it out to be. But I will say the Royals fans are more into the Royals now. You know, for all the criticism the Royals organization catches for the 10 guys that didn't get vaccinated and Cal Eldred and 2 other staff members, and that seems to be overlooked a little bit by some of the Royals fans, it's like, don't bring Cal Eldred back. That'd be a great way to start.
Yeah, start there, not with the players.
Instead of, yeah, right. And so when I look at it with the Royals and the situation that they have right now, clearly, I think Benintendi is going to be traded. I think Michael A. Taylor is going to be traded if they get the right amount or what they want. Maybe they ask for too much. I think there's a chance Whit Merrifield gets traded. Now, Whit Merrifield, I saw his 20-minute interview with Cody Tapp of 610 Sports in Kansas City on Friday. I was not really moved at all. I watched the whole thing. He kept repeating himself over and over. At one point, he started to go into a conspiracy theory, and he stopped himself and checked himself. I noticed that. And he was saying, well, what I meant was, after I said that, I was like, no, I didn't say that the way I wanted to. He meant, I want the postseason's really important to me, and I would reconsider getting a shot if I made the postseason. I mean, I want to do that with the Royals. I have a house here. He said this like 10 times. I have a house here. Just because you have a house here doesn't mean bubkus to
me. I hope
me,
you have a house.
You got to live somewhere.
Have been playing for forever.
No kidding. So he talked about that, and he kept saying this. And then Cody, I thought, asked some good questions. And Whit just kind of kept saying the same things over and over. And I wasn't really moved by it. And I come back to the thing I came talking about last week. I have no problem with Merrifield saying that he doesn't He doesn't, you know, basically he doesn't think the Royals are a winning organization. That's what we interpret out of what he said. I have no problem with him saying that, you know, he wants to play for a contender and he wants to play in the postseason. My problem is if you're willing to change your stance that quickly because you're on a team that's going to make the playoffs, then you're not true in any convictions you have in any of your research that you said that you put out on social media before you did say, but I might do it. I might get the shot. I might get the vaccine if we make the postseason, have to play in Canada. That you totally contradict yourself. And so I lose a little bit of respect there because you're not being consistent with your argument. He said, I've looked at stuff and this and that. Right now, I just don't feel comfortable taking the vaccine. But then suddenly you're traded to a contender. You're suddenly comfortable. See, that's the problem I have with the whole thing with Whit Merrifield is it's clear. You know, you don't think the Royals are going to make the postseason. Thus, you're not going to get a shot. Now, are you saying that if the Royals were 56-36? You would have been vaccinated and went to Toronto for four games? Well, we don't fully know that for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like he would. So basically, and he did say that at a certain point in time, they were told, hey, you know, there's 15 days. You've got 14 days. You got to get the shot here very soon if you want to go to Canada. Well, if the Royals are in contention, it sounds like Whit would have taken the shot.
Yeah.
But they're not. So he's like, well, then why bother? So I don't like that attitude, personally. I mean, you're either against it, the vaccine, or you're not, from the standpoint of if you believe in your research, and I think it's interesting whose sources of research mm-hmm. you use, but whatever his research is, then stand by it. Kyrie Irving stood by it, all right? Novak Djokovic has stood by it.
Yeah.
Whit Merrifield is not. It's just convenient. Well, you know, I could get an early start on the All-Star break. I have 8 days off. He probably saw that and looked at that, to be honest. And that also bothers me because he talks about being an Ironman and playing for 533 games. And then they were asking him about the speculation. Did you see this interview, by the way?
I did not. I did not have time to watch it.
And so Cody said, well, you know, there's internet speculation that your injury isn't really an injury, that this was kind of convenient, blah, blah, blah. And Whit says, I can assure you, I couldn't even swing the bat. It'd been an embarrassment for me to try to go and play the very next day or whatever because I can't even push off and swing and so forth and so on. But yet he said he'd be maybe available for the end of the Toronto series, of course, had he been vaccinated, but he wasn't. And so I think he is hurt. I don't know if it's – and obviously he'll be healed up after the All-Star break. I mean, plenty of time. He sat out four games and have to travel to Toronto.
10 games off because he didn't play.
He didn't play the last couple. Right. So – and his streak is gone now. So anyway, Whit catches a lot of heat and probably rightfully so in some ways. Hunter Dozier is getting somewhat of a pass, which has been pointed out that he should be criticized for some things too. But when Royals fans say, well, we don't need these guys anymore, get rid of them, they're thinking of Whit Merrifield and Hunter Dozier. But you don't want to get rid of Brady Singer right now. You don't want to cut Brad Keller. You don't want to cut Kyle Isabel probably. You probably don't want to get rid of the catcher MJ Melendez, who, by the way, has had a really bad start to his career as a catcher. His metrics, defensive metrics, are not good, by the way. So you've been asking, why is he playing outfield? Because honestly, as a catcher in the big leagues, he has not been that great. Now, offensively, he's been just fine. Mm-hmm. So the Royals make it official today. They're back to their regular team. And now watch the Royals go on a 14-game losing streak. And Royals fans will actually probably enjoy that. That sounds sad, but true.
Yeah.
I told you so. Play the young guys, which I do love the energy, the passion. I was following the Royals a little bit closer this week.
I followed him on Thursday because I had the time to do it, right? Okay. But I ended up being with family and stuff, and a lot of times when that happens for me, Royals and everything else really kind of takes a back seat. So,
which is fine.
I didn't get to watch the games. I saw what happened in the games, but I didn't really get a detailed, you know, see what actually happened, how the kids looked and things like that. So, but it is fun to see that. I mean, you know, you were asking me a couple weeks ago, what's keeping you watching the Royals? Well, that was actually something that got me to watch the Royals again, right? Was all of those guys. The only thing I really, really wish is that MJ Melendez was there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, then it would have been the whole, mm-hmm. like, main, this is okay. The future right here. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
So let's see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm
I mean,
with you.
Kyle Isbell might be part of that, but I don't think he's going to. If things go the right way, he shouldn't be an everyday part of that.
But isn't that weird that it took 10 players to refuse to get vaccinated to bring Royals fans back into the fold, like you and others and myself, too, to follow the guys and want to cheer for them, and now upset that they're going to bring the 10 guys back, which we knew that was going to happen all along.
Yeah.
So we're complaining about nothing because it was inevitable it's going to happen. Now the question is, are they going to trade some of these guys after the All-Star break? Well, we shall see. Well, we'll get to the Royals draft. They made a couple of draft picks last night. I'm sure that they will develop into All-Stars immediately. Sorry, sarcasm. And then the Mariners, their streak is at 14. There's not a worse time to have the All-Star break.
No.
If you're a Seattle Mariner right. fan, you're red hot. It's just that's a horrible time to have the All-Star break when you're, and it's the first time anybody's had this big of a winning streak going into the All-Star break in MLB history. They had a 15-game winning streak, the Mariners, back in 2001. They won against the Rangers 6-2, and it is the longest winning streak in baseball, tying the Braves. The Braves won 14, and all of a sudden, boom, they're in the playoff picture. Mariners, of course, are in a playoff spot now at 51-42 because they've been red hot, and they won again yesterday over Texas. We'll get the Royals draft Cubs update. A home run derby, all-star festivities, a guy that turned down $440 million. Can you imagine somebody coming up to you and saying, hey, man, I'll give you $440 million guaranteed over the next 15 years? Hard pass.
Yeah.
But we'll explain why it makes sense. We'll explain why it might make sense. And people are going, seriously? Yes, we will try to explain it. From a sports angle, it makes sense. From everyday life, it's stupid. But
yeah.
But from his perspective, it probably makes some sense. We'll explain who it is and everything else. And the repercussions of that, because now he may get traded, and he's only 23, and he's a star. And you may not know about him because Major League Baseball doesn't market their players very well. So, anywho. Local baseball, Dusty, lots of action.
Yeah, very, very busy over the weekend. And actually, we'll start with softball, as the K-18 State Softball Tournament took place in Lucas, where Osborne County finished in fourth place. They lost to eventual state champion Ellis in the semifinals. Osborne County did win over Ness City 12-4 in the first round Saturday. They lost to Ellis 9-1 in the semis. And in a tough, hard-fought game, they lost to Phillipsburg 11-10 in the third place game. Ellis winning over Russell 14-6 in the championship on Sunday. You can find the full complete bracket at ncksports.com. Also, K-18 East Regional Baseball, as Clay Center won the championship on Friday over Russell 10-2. Clifton Clyde beat Lincoln 13-8. Lincoln's fourth place finish. They're the only team in our area that made it to the, in our immediate area, that made it to the state tournament, which will be starting on Saturday, as Lincoln will take on West Regional Champ Goodland. And when we have the times and everything like that, we'll put the bracket as well at ncksports.com. Pee-wee District Championships were Friday. Champions from the districts were Concordia Legion in District 1, Osborne 1 District 2, Valley Heights District 3, and Hanover District 4. All four of those teams will have a first-round bye in the Pee-wee State Tournament, which begins tonight in Washington with those first-round games. Lynn against Pike Valley at 7, Clifton against the Concordia Knights at 8:30, and on the bottom bracket in Washington, it's Bullet Rampage against Concordia Lions at 7 o'clock, and Smith Center takes on Bremen at 8:30. Also, that state bracket at ncksports.com. American Legion AA Zone 3 tournament getting underway yesterday in Concordia, and first round games had Clifton winning over Republic County 9-8, Clay Center over Smith County 14-6. In the winners bracket games, Beloit beat Clay Center 9-4, Concordia over Clifton 16-11. Action will continue in Concordia tonight in the double elimination tournament. In the back side of the bracket, Smith County against Clifton and Republic County against Clay Center at 5 o'clock. They'll be playing on two different fields there. The winners of those two games will play at 7:30, and then on the winners bracket at 7:30 tonight, it's Beloit against Concordia. So that's a look at what's going on as far as the American Legion AA Zone tournament is concerned. Again, for the latest in local sports, and most of that information all posted for you in ncksports.com. A lot of summer baseball wrapping up here with state tournaments coming up for K-18 and Pee-wee this week.
All right. It is my oldest son's 16th birthday today. And as he says, hey, what do you want to do for your birthday? He's like, well, we never do anything because he's always busy with sports or something going on and doesn't really get to enjoy it usually. And today he has to work, and he said something about working. I said, you know, believe it or not, son, there are many people that work on their birthdays. I know that is amazing.
Unless mine falls on a weekend.
Unless it falls on a weekend, right. And sometimes you might work on the weekends.
We all don't get a federal holiday.
No, we don't for our birthday. Yeah. We should.
Yeah, we should.
We should. So he has to work today, but that's, you know, he wasn't really mad about anything. But it got me thinking, I want to share this story. I've shared this with Dusty and Jason already, but I'll share this story with everybody else. And I'm sure my son will hate that I share these stories. I know he doesn't like it, but you know what? For his birthday, this will be my treat to him. Well, first of all, I said, what do you want for your birthday? He said, how about some Benjamins? And it's like, well, people, do you know what Benjamins are? Yeah, $100 bills. So that's what he wants, money. He could say money or cash, but, you know, the young kids are more hip than we old people are. Right. So you say Benjamins, and then you're like, Benjamin Franklin? Yeah, he's the face of the $100 bill, if you didn't know. So he wants Benjamins. Like, okay, great. Well, that's easy to do, except we got to decide how much you're worthy of, you know, that type of thing. Probably eat. Get an ice cream cake or something. Who knows? Some ice cream, you can never go wrong with that. That's good for the whole family. Everybody wins there. So I want to tell the story. on a six, for his 16th birthday, since his birthday is today, and it's hard to believe, but he'll graduate when he's 17. He'll turn 18 after he graduates, as long as they pass him the next 2 years. We don't know that for sure.
Make sure he gets all that coursework done.
I don't want to assume anything there. Very, very proud of him and what he's done. And it's hard to believe that in a couple of years he'll be in college and he won't be around. So trying to enjoy the moments and the time with him as much as I can. And him and I have been spending a lot of time together because we had to fly to Atlanta for a basketball tournament. And so we got to, you know, kind of have that banter back and forth. Some of it's interesting, to say the least. So proud of him. And then, of course, we had even more because we went to Kansas City, just him and me, this weekend. As my rest of my family were coming back from a trip to Colorado with my wife's side of the family, just didn't work out schedule-wise for us all to be together. So we were split. And that happens sometimes. So anyway, I want to share the story. Because he's a kid that can drive, okay? And he's very responsible, you know, as far as I know. He's very responsible in what he does. And, you know, obviously as parents, we try to remind him of different things and so forth and so on. And I'm sure he's tired of hearing that, just like any teenager's tired of hearing from their parents, right? We've all been there. When we're teenagers, we think our parents are overbearing, over maybe controlling, or over worrisome, especially mom, blah, blah, blah. And then you get older and you're like, you know, mom and dad might have known a little bit more than I thought. But you don't know it now. But you will. If you live long enough, you probably will. And so anyway, he can drive. He's responsible driver and done a good job with that and so forth and so on. We trust him, which is important. You need to trust your kids. If you don't trust your kids or trust anybody, then you got problems with anybody, whether it's your kid or not. And I've always told him, I said, listen, it's better to be honest than to lie, because if you lie, you lose all that trust you built up. It is completely knocked to the ground, and you got to take time to rebuild it, and thus you won't get to do some of the things you want to do because you lied. So it's best to be honest the best that you can be. Now, maybe there's a few little white lies. I know nobody's naive enough, I think, out there listening to think that nobody does a little light white lie here and there, okay? But we're talking big stuff, right? Because I'm going to tell you something. Moms and dads are a little bit more privy to knowing what you're doing than you think that you do. I remember thinking I got away with certain stuff when I was in high school, and I later found out in college or later on, mom and dad were aware. And especially when you're in a small town or area and everybody knows everybody, they somehow find out more often than not that you did something. Now, maybe they address it. Maybe they don't address it. But it is funny later on when you get older, you think, listen, now I can tell my mom what I did. And then you tell them and they're like, yeah, we knew. What? How did you know? Yeah, you know, we got people following you. We got tracking devices now with technology. And we know where you are all the time and you don't even know it. That type of thing. That's not true here in this situation, but I'm just talking. I'm sure that happened before, right, Dusty? And Jason, you guys did things that you thought mom and dad didn't know about, but then somehow you found out later, oh, yeah, they knew, and you're like, really? Well, why didn't you do something to me? You
know? I don't know if I got to the point where I found out later that they knew. They just found out all the time. Yeah, most of the stuff.
You couldn't hide anything.
I was like, I couldn't. Well, mom worked at the grade school, so if I did anything at the school, somebody from the high school would tell her at the grade school, you know. But for the one that comes to my mind, I was not a rebel, right? In high school, I didn't even try to do a whole lot of.
I wasn't really either.
You know, but there was one year where I had an out of town date set up for the Halloween dance, and she had a cousin. Actually, I was really good friends with her cousin that lived in Waukini, and so she was going to stay with her cousin that night when she came to the dance with me. Mm-hmm. Well, everything was good. I signed her in on the sheet for the dance. I didn't tell my parents. I wasn't supposed to have a out of town date, I don't believe. So
you don't believe?
I just
wrote it.
I think I could have asked, and they might have told me it was okay, but I just didn't even want to ask. Right? I'm like, I think I can get away with this without anybody finding out. Uh-huh. And that doesn't work in a small town. Place where she was staying, my friend Kim's mom decided to tell my mom at the drugstore that, hey, here your son's got a date coming into town on Friday night. And I'm like, oh, great.
And then the whole town knew.
Ruined the whole thing.
What about you, Jason?
I was going to get away with it.
You were, but it didn't work out. You believed it was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember trying to hide it necessarily, but it wasn't something I was going to broadcast to everybody either. Mm-hmm. But got a speeding ticket. Mm-hmm. Wasn't near home, was mm-hmm. near another town. Mm-hmm. Well, of all things, my grandmother subscribed to that newspaper. It wasn't far from home, so mm-hmm. she subscribed to that newspaper, mm-hmm. and she read it in that newspaper. Mm-hmm. And then she said, oh, Jason got a speeding ticket, and told mom. And I'm like, oh, okay, I just paid it. I just took care of it. I just, you
yeah,
know.
Try to cover it up, pay for it. Yeah,
I did have one of those deals too.
Yeah, and, but it was I didn't even think about it being in the paper of the town I got pulled over in. But no, yeah, it wasn't a bad speeding ticket. It was like 67. I'm in a 60.
Or well, that's not bad. Not bad at all.
It wasn't like 87 or anything. Yeah, like that, but it was still speeding and still paid it. And
yeah,
but. Yeah.
I have no stories to share. I was perfect. did not make any mistakes when I was a teenager at all. And mom and dad knew that whatever I did, I was doing that. That's why I hope my kids aren't listening right now when it comes to all that. So thanks for sharing those stories. And I'm sure I'll hear one somewhere down the line from my oldest son. But he turned 16 today. And like I said, he can drive. He's pretty responsible, so forth and so on. In fact, we came back to Kansas City. I let him drive the last hour. In my truck, he has got an older truck that I have, and did a nice job, so forth and so on. So I'm going to tell this story in celebration of his birthday today. So we were in Atlanta, and we were coming back. We flew to Atlanta, and very smooth, and we're going to fly back. Well, we had a game on a Friday, and we had games on Saturday, games on a Sunday, and we hadn't got the schedule yet, and we decided, and I asked my son, we originally were going to drive all the way to Atlanta, and it was going to be him, me, and another parent of a teammate and a teammate, so four people. Well, then they decided to fly. So then it was like, does my 16-year-old or 15-year-old and I want to be in the car together for 16 hours one way and then 16 hours back? And so I asked his opinion on it. And he said, yeah, I'd be okay because I think the 16 hours coming back would be pretty boring. I'm like, yeah, we might not like each other anymore, possibly. So I said, I don't really have relief driving, and I don't want him driving in, obviously, big areas. So we decided to fly. And there were just only a few seats left on the flights to fly out of Wichita. I wanted to wait till the schedule had actually come out from Atlanta so I knew what flight to the returning flight, which one to pick on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was going to be either 3:40 in the afternoon or 9:40 in the evening. And Lord knows I didn't want to do the 9:40 in the evening. So I contact Will Spradling, and I said, hey, Will, he's the one who runs this basketball organization that my son's part of. And I said, hey, do you know when's the latest that we play, or what's the situation on Sunday? Because the schedule hadn't come out yet, which is annoying with these traveling tournaments, is when the schedules don't come out till the middle of the week. You know, it's hard to plan. Parents, they don't think of the parents, and honestly, these organizations don't give a bleep about the parents. I'm just going to be honest with you about that. They don't care one single bit.
Don't really care a whole lot about the players.
No, they
to
don't.
Be honest with you.
No, they don't.
They just want the money that comes in because of them.
It's exactly right. I can give you a couple examples of what happened in Kansas City that were just atrocious, and they don't care about parents. They don't care. Honestly, they don't care about development of the kids either in regards to a lot of these tournament organizers. It's all about the Benjamins, as my son would say.
Absolutely.
So Will tells me, well, we could play as late as 1 or 2 on Sunday. Well, shoot. Now, I like to wait to see the schedule come out. 9 times out of 10, we're going to play Sunday morning, and I could book the 3:40 flight out of Atlanta, go to Wichita, get back to Wichita like 4:30 Central Time, get home decently. There's only like 2-4 seats left on the plane. I don't want to miss out and then have to drive or pay a ton of money to try to get on another flight to get to Atlanta or so forth and so on and change the whole thing. So I'm like, I got to play it safe, right? Because it'd be really silly to go, and we play at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, and my son says, I'm sorry, I can't play. That's the whole point we're going is play basketball. So to miss one of the four games seems kind of stupid. So I had to play it safe. And so I booked a 9:30 or 9:40 flight in the evening. And, of course, the schedule comes out a day or two later, and guess what time we play? 9:05 a.m. So then I'm like, great. Then I thought, well, we can kill an hour in the hotel. They'll let us have a late checkout, right? They're in Atlanta near the airport, and we'll check out at noon. We'll probably get to the airport 12:30. We still got to kill 9 hours. That's a lot of time. So I asked the hotel, can we check out, an hour late? Usually you can. And they said no. Okay. So now we're going to have 10 to 11 hours to kill at the airport. And so we get to the airport, and so we fly in Delta, and so I have the app on my phone, and I put us on standby. I've never done this before. I haven't flown in at least probably 5 years, and things have changed, no doubt. And so, but it's very easy to change flights, do this, but there's usually a fee to do it. But I didn't want to pay the extra money the day prior. I'm like, we just have to suck it up, and we wait around the airport. We will know everything about the Atlanta terminal and airport than anybody else. But then I thought, it's worth a shot to be on standby. So put us on standby, very easy to do, and then they'll cancel your later flight if you get on. So after we eat, we go to the terminal gate or whatever, and for the 3:40 Wichita flight. And so we're there, and I look at the standby on my phone, I look up on the monitor, and there's three people in front of us. I'm like, dang it! Three people in front of us. What are the odds we're going to get on? I'm thinking, this is going to be close. I figured it's going to be close. And they say, so many seats are remaining. Four seats remaining, and my son is number five on the list, and I'm four. And I'm like, eh, okay, that ain't going to fly. If we have to be split up, that's not going to work. And, you know, do I have to buy the two first-class tickets? So there's Comfort Plus. I want to spend money. Now I want to spend any more money. But at the same time, I don't want to stay here for 6 hours. So I'm hoping to get something that pops up in the main cabin where I don't have to pay any extra money and fly out at 3:40 instead of 9:40. So we're at the airport, and we're watching these three folks. There's a kid who's on the 17 and under SSA team. He's from Smoky Valley, Lindsberg, and his parents. And so we didn't, I never met them before, and they're staring at the standby monitor. I go, you're the three people in front of us. They're like, yes, yes, we are. They were going to fly out the next day. They said, hey, you know what? We're going to go earlier if we can. And we told them we wanted to not sit around for 6 hours for a late flight that might get canceled, because those are the most likely flights to get canceled, the end of the day flights. So they were pulling for us. We figured they probably would get on. They got on. And they turned to us like, hope you get on. So they get on. And then the flight attendant at the gate, she says, calls my name. And I come up and she says, we have one standby ticket remaining. I'm like, well, that's not going to work. And I turn to my son and he goes, well, Dad, he said, I could go ahead and go and drive around Wichita for 6 hours until you get in later. I'm like, hell no. No, 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 no. That is not going to happen. But I was like, touche. I might say the same thing if I were you. I'm trying to picture my son driving around Wichita for 6 hours. How many bad things could happen there? Nothing bad would happen there at all. I'm like, well, you would have to use your own money for once, but okay. You'd have to pay for the gas in the truck. So we told the flight attendant that's a no-go, and she kind of laughed when he said that. And said, well, what's the situation? Has everybody checked in? And she said, well, there are three people that haven't officially checked in, but two had already warned me they were going to eat and they were going to be back. And she goes, there's one other one that has not reported yet. Her name is Crystal something. I said, so if she doesn't get on this flight, does that mean my son and I will get on the plane together and get back to Wichita at 4:30? And she said, yes. My son and I looked at each other like, okay, let's pull for Crystal not to make this flight. So then the two people she said were going to show up did show up at the kind of the last minute. And they keep calling this lady's name like a thousand times, like, just shut up and let us on the plane. Quit saying this. Quit saying this. Now, think about it. If it were me by myself running late, I'd want them to hold it and so forth. So, yes, we're selfish. And I told my oldest son, I said, listen, if there's somebody sprinting down the concourse coming towards the terminal, I said, we are done. We are stuck here for another 6 hours. So that's a bad sign. Now, I've told this story to about 10 people. You know what every single person, almost every single person has said when I've shared that part of the story? You should trip them. You should tell them it's another terminal. They said all kinds of things to mess with the person. They'll be sprinting down the concourse. Trip them. Kick them, drop them. What? I'm like, seriously? Really? That hadn't crossed my mind at all. So after I said that, a minute later, there's this lady that briskly walks up to the flight attendant at the gate. And Noah and I look at each other like, oh, crud. She comes up. She kind of briskly walks. So she looks like she's kind of in a hurry. And comes up flight attendant. Flight attendant says, yeah, are you Crystal such and such? And she's like, and we're like, oh, no. And she goes, no, I just had a question. And my son and I look at each other like, yes. We're just like doing fist pumps. We're like, yes, she's not getting on the plane. That's not the Crystal McCary or whatever. And they call her name again. I'm like, flight attendant, quit it. Stop it. Put us on the plane. So finally, at the last minute, they gave up on Crystal. Sorry, Crystal, wherever you are, if you're listening to the show, I will send you a thank you note and maybe even a gift card. Because thanks for missing your flight. So we end up getting on. I had to check on our baggage right there because they had already were full on the plane. We get on the plane, and we taxi out like 4 minutes after we get on the plane. We get on the plane. We see the Smoky Valley people. We fist bump them. There's other people on the plane like happy we're on the plane. And we sit down. And then I talked to them yesterday at the Kansas City term about that whole situation, the Smoky Valley folks. And they said we had told other people on the plane, and they were like, they were like watching to see if you guys would get on. And he said there's two people that got on. Well, that was people that were eating at the last minute. They got on, and the Smoky Valley folks said, we were like, dang it, that had to be the two. And you guys were just out of luck. And we were like, yeah, they're not going to get on. And all of a sudden we saw you. And so we're fist bumping people we just met getting on the plane and got back at 4:30, had time to eat in Wichita last Sunday, and then make it back to Beloit in a great time. Instead of get back at 1 in the morning, we got back like at 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And so it was really a fun story that I'll never forget, because My oldest and I are able to get on. We really wanted to get on that standby flight. We did. But he was like, I'll just take one for the team and go early. And you can stay here. I was like, you want to take one for the team? Stay late. Let me drive around Wichita for 6 hours. You know?
I trust you. You can get back to Wichita by yourself.
You know what would probably happen if I would have done that? I'd get the airport at, what would have been, 11 o'clock at night. And there'd be no truck, nobody picking me up because he forgot or maybe even drove all the way back to Beloit and I'm on my own. And I'd be an expensive cab ride all the way from Wichita to Beloit. Let me tell you that for sure. So anyway, happy birthday to my oldest son. Proud of you, man. And he's probably sleeping right now and didn't hear a word of this. And he'll probably be ticked off if anybody else tells him that I said something about his birthday on the air. But that's the prerogative of parents.
Exactly.
You know, it's part of it. All right, the Royals, speaking of young people, the Royals with the draft last night, Major League Baseball draft, Jackson Holliday, a shortstop from Stillwater, Oklahoma High School, was number one overall pick by the Orioles. The D-backs took Drew Jones. That's the son of Andrew Jones. Remember him with the Braves, who won the Gold Glove like 10 times in a row, played in the World Series at the age of 19. He was selected out of Wesleyan High School in the Atlanta metro area. He was number two to the D-backs. And then the third pick surprised a lot of people. Kumar Rocker, who was a 10th pick last year by the Mets, but then he decided not to sign, re-enter the draft this year. He had some surgery, and so he's looked pretty good since the surgery. Well, the Rangers took him at number three, which was surprising to a lot of people. The Royals did not have to select until 9, and they took this person.
The Kansas City Royals select Gavin Cross, an outfielder from Virginia Tech.
Gavin Cross is a fourth-year junior outfielder. So the Royals go the college route again instead of high school out of Virginia Tech. In 57 starts in 2022, Cross hit .328, 17 homers, 50 RBIs, 12 for 12 on stolen base attempts. The Royals were supposed to have the 35th pick in the competitive balance round A, but that was traded to the Braves, of course, not too long ago. And Atlanta selected J.R. Ritchie, a pitcher out of Washington, with that pick. The only other Royals selection last night was Arkansas third baseman Caden Wallace. Wallace hit .298, 16 homers, 60 RBIs, 67 games for the Arkansas Razorbacks last year. The Royals will add more players today as the draft continues at rounds 3 through 10. So the Royals, with their two selections, go college and college. And they go outfielder and third base. They go hitter. They don't do any pitching, which is interesting. And the other thing that people are going to really pay attention to, if you're really a diehard Royals fan, and I know I'm going to try to remember this, J.R. Ritchie. Why am I interested in J.R. Ritchie? Because the Braves selected him. Because the Royals would have had that pick, and they went with Drew Waters and a couple other prospects of the Braves, and the Braves took the 35th pick. It was a rare draft pick that was traded recently. You can trade only like 10 picks in the whole draft, and it's tied to the competitive balance round. And so if Drew Waters, who seems to be the whole key to the trade for the Royals, although the Hoffman kid they got looks pretty good so far in the minors for the Royals, if those guys don't pan out and J.R. Ritchie becomes the next Justin Verlander, or the Clayton Kershaw, whatever. I don't even know if he's a right-hand or left-hand pitcher out of Washington. Don't matter. Then Royals fans are going to look back and go, that was one of the worst trades the Royals ever made. So, J.R. Ritchie, keep an eye on that guy. Nothing personal against the kid. I just hope he doesn't turn out to be super awesome. If he makes the bigs, that's fine. Make his money. It's all good. All right, time for a Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
Brought to you by the Marquee Sports Network.
Amen, brother.
Yeah.
It's Marquee.
It is. It's Cubs win 3-2 over the New York Mets.
Woohoo! So. Oh, they beat the first place Mets.
Yep.
That helps the Braves.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Ended on a good note, the first half, or the what they call the first half anyway.
Right.
35-57.
35-57. You mean the Royals
still
are a game better
game
than the Cubs?
Behind the Royals.
Holy shnikes. That's awesome. Actually, it's not. That means the Cubs draft higher than the Royals do next time. That's what that means. Well, the poor Cubbies. So let's look at the Major League Baseball standings here at the All-Star break. They say halfway point. And then, you know, teams have played 90-some games.
Right.
And the halfway point would be 81. The Yankees have a 13-game lead over Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay just finds a way every year to be competitive in a tough division, small market team. They do it right. That's what the Royals need to be. That's the organization they need to model themselves after. Yankees 13-game lead. Yankees have kind of struggled lately. They had a losing streak. They've split their last 10. When you play 162-game schedule, you just can't keep winning 75% of the time all year long. Now, the Mariners did it in 0-1, 72% of the time, and then didn't make the World Series. Toronto is 14.5 back, Boston 16.5 back, and the Orioles are at .500 as they had their winning streak recently broke, their 10-game winning streak. They're 18 games out of first, and they're a .500 team. So every team in the American League East has a .500 record or better. So clearly that's the best division in baseball, there's no doubt. In the AL Central, for instance, the Twins lead the division by just two games over the Guardians of Cleveland. The White Sox have come on to get back to 500 at 46-46. They're three games back. The Royals are one game out of fourth, or out one game away from getting out of last, whichever you want to look at it. So if the Baltimore Orioles were in the AL Central, they're in fifth place out of five teams of AL East. If they were in the AL Central, the Baltimore Orioles would be three games out of first. They're 18 out of first and have four teams ahead of them to leapfrog to win the division. If Boston was in the American League Central, they would be a game and a half out. If it was Toronto, Toronto would lead the American League Central by half a game if they were in the right division for themselves. Instead, they are with Tampa Bay and the Yankees. The American League West, Houston has a nine-game lead over the Red Hot Mariners. As we said, they have won 14 in a row. Texas and the Angels in Oakland are not good. So that division, not great, except for Houston and the Mariners, who are hot. The NL East is a very interesting race. The Mets are 58-35. They have a two-and-a-half-game lead over the defending World Series champion Atlanta Braves. The Phillies are above 500, 8.5 out of first. And the Nationals are one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in baseball right now, at 31-63. More on them in a moment. The Brewers have a half-game lead over the Cardinals in the NL Central, and then nobody's even close after that. Pittsburgh's in third, and they're 15 under. The Cubs are not in last place, though. They're a half-game ahead of the Reds. I know you're excited about that. Go, Cubs, go. Holy cow. And National League West, the Dodgers have a healthy 10-game lead over the Padres. The Giants are above 500, but they're 12.5 out. Colorado, nearby. Rockies are 43-50. D-backs are 40-52. So when you look at the wild card standings, and remember, there is more playoff teams that could make it now. So right now, if the season ended today, the Yankees would win the East. The Houston would win the West. The Minnesota Twins would win the AL Central. The wild card teams would be in this order: Tampa Bay, then Seattle, and then Toronto. Boston is two games out of the wild card. Cleveland 2.5. Orioles 3.5. White Sox 3.5. Listen, the Royals are only 13.5 out of the last wild card. So all they need is a 14-game winning streak, and they'll only be 6 or 7 out. In the National League, the Dodgers, of course, with the West lead, the Mets with the East lead, and Milwaukee with the Central lead. Atlanta would be the top wild card. San Diego would be the second wild card. The Phillies are tied with the Cardinals for the last playoff spot. The Giants are a half game back. And Colorado, well, they need a 10-game winning streak. They're back in it. They're 6.5 out of the last wild card. So when you expand the playoff field, you stay in contention longer, which is good, especially for small market teams. Creates a little bit of excitement. But the Royals are so bad, we still can't even. We need the Royals need the playoffs to be expanded to 25 teams. Then maybe the Royals would be in contention. Unfortunately, they are not. Major League Baseball is headed into the All-Star break. And tonight, it is in L.A., the annual home run derby. Did you hear about the concession stand workers? They were going to strike or thought about striking, but now they're not going to.
I saw the headlines that said they were going to, and then the headline that says they are not going
they're
to.
They're not going to.
I didn't read the story.
Don't know what changed their mind. But the home run derby is tonight. Takes center stage at Dodger Stadium. Two-time defending champion Pete Alonso of the Mets joins Kyle Schwarber, Juan Soto, more on him in a moment, Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, who is a runaway guy for Rookie of the Year right now. He looks unbelievable for Seattle. Big reason why they're playing well. Corey Seager, Jose Ramirez, and Albert Pujols. I think it'd be awesome if Albert won the Home Run Derby. I'm not a Cardinal fan, but Albert Pujols win a Home Run Derby, or at least having a really good showing, I think would be really cool. Home Run Derby starts tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Are you guys pulling for Pujols?
I want not Pete Alonso to win the Home Run Derby. Otherwise, don't really care.
I think it'd be cool.
Pujols.
I think it'd be cool if Pujols or the rookie Julio Rodriguez wins it. Yeah. I think that'd be kind of neat, but we shall see. I mentioned Juan Soto. Why is Juan Soto a big name today? Ladies and gentlemen, Washington Nationals outfielder Juan Soto, and the Nationals are the worst team in baseball right now at 31-63. And by the way, if you're really wondering about, you know, where the Royals are in this pecking order, because my oldest son recently said, oh, well, that's embarrassing to lose to the Royals, are the worst team in baseball. And I'm like, no, contraire, mon frere. They're not the worst team in baseball. If you actually look at the standings, the Royals, they are the second worst team in the American League, okay? But they're better than the Nationals, the Reds, and the Cubs. So the Royals are the fifth worst baseball team. Or as I like to say, they're the 25th best team in the world. They're the 25th best team in the world. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that have a better ring to it?
It does.
Yeah, but they're the top 25. They're a top 20. If the AP rankings come out, the Royals are in the top 25. It's pretty cool.
Sure it is.
Yeah. If you had a camera and see our reactions at each other, that was pretty funny. So the Nationals are the worst team in all of baseball. They won the World Series 4 years ago. They have one of the best players in baseball, but you might not have heard of him because Major League Baseball sucks at marketing their players, as we talked about this over and over. Juan Soto is 23 years old, and Juan Soto is off to an amazing start in his Major League career. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know how amazing he's been to start his career, because how would I?
I thought he was older than that because you hear a lot about him, and it's like...
Well, he came in at 19.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Andrew Jones kind of last guy I remember at 19, oddly enough. We mentioned him earlier with his son being drafted. So Juan Soto, when he was 19 in 2018... hit 22 homers and drove in 70 and hit 292 at 19. Then at 20, he had 110 RBIs, 34 homers, stole 12 bases, walked 108 times, didn't only strike out 132, hit 282. That OPS is 949. That's dang good. And that's at 20 years old. When he was 21, of course, that was a COVID season, 13 homers in 47 games, 37 RBIs, and led the league in five offensive categories, batting average, OBP, slug, OPS, and OPS plus, and led in intentional walks, led in six categories. In a full season last year in 2021, all he did was walk 145 times and struck out just 93. He had 313. His on-base percentage was led the league at 47% of the time he got on base. And he was walked intentionally 23 times. He was an all-star, and he has MVP votes. As a 20, 21, and 22-year-old, he's had MVP votes. And so, last year, he had 29 homers, 95 RBIs, 20 doubles, walked 145 times, so he's not afraid to take a walk. Played 151 games. This year, 20 home runs in 91 games. So he's on pace for about 30 to 35 homers again. 43 RBIs, which RBIs come sometimes misleading because the guys are on a bad team and they ain't getting on. He's hitting a lot of solo shots. He's walked 79 times, leads the bigs again. He struck out just 54 times. Now, his batting average is 250, so that's not great, but other numbers are pretty good because he's willing to take a walk.
OBP's pretty good.
Please, Royals please, Royals players, take a note. Juan Soto is more mature than anybody on the Royals team to take a walk and gets on base. Even on a bad team, he's still patient. Yeah, his OPS is still over 90, or 901. His on-base percentage is still 41%. Not as good as last year, but still not bad. So Juan Soto is a star. Just because you didn't hear about him doesn't mean he isn't a star, but he is. And he's only 23. So the Nationals did what the Royals are probably going to have to do with Bobby Witt Jr. at some point. And Bobby Witt Jr., who's having a decent year offensively, and he's had the flashes defensively. He's had a few errors lately. But the Royals at some point, Bobby Witt Jr. is 22. I mean, now he didn't come in the league at 19. But in a couple of years, if Bobby Witt Jr. has a really good year the rest of this year, next year he really just blows up, then the Royals are going to have to be thinking about giving a big deal to Bobby Witt Jr., or they're going to have to play the old Carlos Beltran thing and go through the whole thing and then trade him because we can't afford him, which odds are they probably can't afford him. That's what's unfortunate. But Juan Soto was offered $440 million over the weekend. What a nice weekend. $440 million. And remember, this is guaranteed money. Guaranteed money.
Baseball's different. It is guaranteed.
It's guaranteed. So when you first hear the story, you're like, well, this kid has to be crazy. Turned out $440 million. And my next question was, how many years is it? If it's 10 years, $440 million, I think he's crazy for turning it down. Well, I found out it's 15 years. Can you take 440 divided by 15 for me?
It's just less than 30.
Okay, so just less than 30. So $29.5 million a year. Would he be the highest paid player in baseball if they did that?
There's about
I think
there's about 10 to 12 that are over 30.
Yeah.
And I think the highest is about 35. I don't know right off the top of
my head. Max Scherzer's $43 million a year.
Wow.
So he's not even close. I didn't realize either. Number two is Garrett Cole at $36 million a year, and Mike Trout is $35.5 million a year. So you sit here, and this is why I'm going to try to explain to people, and this can be very difficult to do.
Yeah.
This is going to be very difficult to do. I'm going to try.
He was smart to turn that down.
He was smart to turn it down. And it's insane because you see the headline. Guy turns down. He's 23.
How would that feel? That would feel so great to just go in there and say, nah. You got to do better.
So I'll give you a couple two ways of looking at this. One is, are you crazy? You turned down $440 million. But you'd have to be with the Nationals for the next 15 years. And maybe he's looking at the Nationals going, I don't know if I want to be here this long because we stink right now. But he's also based on the market. Now, see, this is the whole key. Your market value. You need to know your market value. Juan Soto should get more than $30 million a year. He's 23, and I am not big on long-term deals in any sport. I've said it before. Albert Pujols' deal was just ludicrous and stupid by the Angels when he's 32 and they do a 10-year deal with him. That's insane. But if you're ever going to do a long-term deal with a guy, you want to do it when they're probably 22 to 25. In that range, when they're entering their prime or the best is ahead of them, you believe they're off to a good start. Like Julio Rodriguez, if you believe he's a real deal, maybe you want to wait one more year to see if it's not a fluke. But the Mariners are talking about, they already got to think about him. The Royals might have to start thinking about Bobby Witt Jr. if MJ Melendez goes nuts. I mean, that's part of the problem with small market teams is they probably can't keep these guys that they drafted and then they develop. And then, of course, we got to trade them, get more prospects, and then get another guy we develop, and then we can't afford, and we trade him, and it's a vicious cycle. But Max Scherzer he pitches every 5 days, and he's been hurt a lot. He's $43 million a year. Garrett Cole's $36 million. Mike Trout's been hurt a lot lately, and he hasn't won a playoff game. Juan Soto's at least won a World Series. He's been part of a World Series team and a very important part of it, and been in other playoffs. Mike Trout, $35.5 million. Carlos Correa is the fourth highest paid player, and he's past his prime. He's with the Twins now. So the highest paid players in Major League Baseball, those four are getting paid more than the offer for Juan Soto, which is on average just under $30 million a year. So why would a guy be crazy enough to turn down $440 million? Because Correa is fourth. Anthony Rendon, who's been a complete train wreck with the Angels, another horrible contract by the Angels, he is fifth along with Steven Strasburg. So Steven Strasburg, on the national team, who's been hurt and hasn't pitched a lot, pitches every 5 days when he's healthy, is at $35 million. Don't you think Juan Soto, an everyday player, is worth more than $35 million?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, not in everyday society. No. Now, yeah. See, that's the hard part for people to understand. I'm not telling you that Juan Soto is worth $35 million a year in regular world. But when in baseball or in sports, you know, Mahomes is worth every penny of his contract. Let me tell you that. There's no doubt he's worth it. And I'm okay with giving big money to the quarterbacks in the NFL because you take away the quarterback and you go back down to maybe we make the playoffs, but we're not a Super Bowl contender. You lose your left tackle. Hey, the Chiefs still made the Super Bowl. You know, you lose Eric Berry, you still made an AFC title game. You know, but you lose Patrick Mahomes, Chad Henne ain't going to lead this team to the Super Bowl. I'm just going to go out on a limb here. Chiefs have never been to a Super Bowl since Lynn Dawson until Mahomes became the quarterback. So Mahomes is worth every penny. And Juan Soto is an everyday player. He's a really good player. He's patient. He is more mature than his years. He's put up some big numbers in 4 years already. And the Nationals say, you're so good, dude. We love you. We're going to give the security of a 15-year deal. We're going to give you guaranteed $440 million. A lot of people listening go, well, just sign it. But the thing is, why would he sign a 15-year deal at $30 million a year when guys like, well, let's just go through it again. Number one is Max Scherzer. He's not as good a player as Juan Soto. Scherzer's in the back end of his career, man. Garrett Cole is not a better player than Juan Soto. He's getting $36 million a year. I would argue that Mike Trout is no better than Juan Soto. Maybe you could say he's slightly better. He's getting $35 million. So Juan Soto should get at least $35 million a year, at least, right? Would you agree with that? Just as good as Mike Trout. Trout signed a 12-year, $426 million deal ahead of 2019. So those are the highest-paid players. Now, fourth is Carlos Correa. 3 years, $105 million. That's $35 million a year. Juan Soto's way better than Carlos Correa at this point of his career. He's better than Steven Strasburg. Anthony Rendon, that's a joke. I mean, so that's five and six. Corey Seager, who's in the Home Run Derby tonight, $32.5 million a year. He signed a 10-year, $325 million contract. He's with the Rangers. Nolan Arenado, I say that wrong all the time, his last name, Arenado. He is at ninth highest, and he's gotten maybe in the middle of his prime to the end of his prime, you know, but he's still a really good player for the Cardinals. He's ninth highest. And Freddie Freeman, and I'm sorry, Freddie Freeman's a great dude and all, but he's getting paid, what, $27 million a year? Juan Soto's only getting $2 million more per year than Freddie Freeman? Juan Soto's a way better player than Freddie Freeman. In my opinion, I don't think any of you are going to disagree.
Right now, for sure, yeah.
He's way better than Chris Bryant, who's getting $26 million. So as I scroll through this list here, the offer on the table for Juan Soto is just under $30 million a year, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
29.3.
If he signed this deal right now, and people out there going, well, he just signed it, $440 million. What an idiot. Why would you turn that down? Well, If it's 440 over 10 years, as I said, he should run, not walk, and sign it. Because he would then be the highest paid player in Major League Baseball history. $44 million a year, just better than Max Scherzer. So when I saw $440 million, I figured it was a 10-year deal. When I saw 15, I said, oh, now I know why he turned it down.
Yeah.
Do you know where he would rank if he signed this deal today for $440 million? Over $59.3 million a year. And I know people listening going, you got to be kidding me. Just take the money and run. No, he's worth more than that in baseball terms. Do you know where he would rank? Like, how many more players would be paid more than him after he signs this deal? Want to take a guess? How many guys do you think in the big leagues are making $30 million or more right now?
Well, I thought it was just 9 or 10, but
there's more.
I was wrong. Yep.
I'm going to say he'd be 16th.
You're very close. He would be 15th.
Yeah.
He would be behind Manny Machado.
And is Tatis part of that list? I can't remember how big his... Yeah, I thought he kind of signed a pretty team-friendly deal for what he was.
He's at $24 million a year. Okay. He signed a long-term deal.
Yeah, it was a long-term
deal.
He's
27th.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I couldn't remember how much his was.
So... Jacob DeGrom is $27.5 million. He hasn't pitched in the bigs this year. He's been hurt. Chris Sale's trying to come back and now broke his pinky. He's making $29 million. So Juan Soto, at the age of 23, who's put together four really good seasons, has a deal on the table for $29.3 million a year, but a total of $440. And people get caught up in the total, $440, and rightfully so. But you think so highly of this kid that you're going to pay him less than Chris Sale, or just barely more than Chris Sale. You're going to pay him less than Manny Machado, Mookie Betts, David Price, Miguel Cabrera, Nolan Arenado, Corey Seager, Trevor Bauer, who's not even a legal, I mean, he's got all kinds of legal issues, Francisco Lindor, who's making $34 million, Anthony Rendon at $35 million, Steven Strasburg, Carlos Correa, Mike Trout, Garrett Cole, and Max Scherzer at $43.3 million with the Mets, and he's like 38 years old. Listen, Juan Soto is right to turn it down. I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's true. Based on his market value, he should not accept this deal. If the Nationals change it to 10, he should. That would make him the highest paid player in the league. And honestly, based on his youth and his numbers, he should be the highest paid player in baseball. Hmm. That would be the perfect deal. You're just slightly better than Max Scherzer. But I'm just sitting here thinking, if I'm Juan Soto, I want $40 million a year for sure. But do I want to go that many years? I mean, it's guaranteed, but if I go with like a 4 or 5 year deal
and opt out.
And then I can opt out, and I believe at 28 I can get another gigantic deal that's gonna be worth way more than what it is now. That's why that deal that the Royals made when Salvador Perez was younger was a great deal for the team. It's also a great deal to Padres with Tatis, although he's been hurt because he had something he did off season and got himself hurt. But he's kind of a bargain once he's healthy, $25 million a year. That was smart. Tatis took the security. So as a young player, you're trying to determine what's your market value, but also you're thinking long-term security, right? You're thinking guaranteed money. So it's hard to imagine a 23-year-old saying no to $440 million. And on the surface, it makes no sense. But if you really dig into it, it makes total sense. Now, I can hear somebody out there in my ear telling me and in my brain, yeah, but isn't he taking a big risk? Yes, he is. He is taking a big risk. If he continues to play for a bad team and he tries to dive, catch, try to leap up against the wall, he tears the labrum in his shoulder. Or he tears his ACL. Now, and you can recover from some of these things, but don't you think that hurts him down the line a little bit into regards to getting that big deal?
Yep.
So he is taking a risk. And what he's doing is he's betting on himself, but he's also sitting here going, listen, you're basically saying, we love you, Juan Soto. We're going to guarantee you basically the rest of your career as a National. We're going to give you the money, but we don't think you're worth one of the top 15 players in the league on a yearly basis. So we are going to, instead of giving you $45 million over 5 years, we are going to give you long-term security, and you're set for the rest of your life. Now, some people that are listening to this show would say, I would run, not walk, and sign that, even though I look and go, Anthony Rendon's making $5 million more than me? That guy isn't very good anymore. Steven Strasburg's a teammate of mine. He can't stay healthy. And when he is healthy, he only pitches one every 5 days. I'm playing every day. I should make more than him. Because in any form of society, in any business you're in, if you're starting to look at what you do compared to somebody you work with or in a comparable profession, and you're going, wait a minute, why is Joe, he's only been in this thing for 3 years, why is Joe making twice as much money as me and I've been doing this for 10? I know I'm better than Joe. Well, what do? You want to try to go leverage. You negotiate, or you might just decide, I quit. I'm going somewhere else where I'm appreciated and get paid what I'm worth. But do you really sit there and go, I, you know what, I'm good. I've been taken care of here. I've got stability. I'm good. Even though I'm making 60% or 20% less than another person fresh out of college. And some people would say it's not, the money doesn't mean happiness at all. And I will stay where I am. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with making less money than this person I know I'm better than. But when it comes to athletes and agents, that's not how they look at it. Patrick Mahomes, I will say this again, took a, and I know it's hard for people to understand because it's $500 million. Patrick Mahomes, people said he should have taken this discount and helped the team. He did. He did. They backloaded a lot. He didn't get his money guaranteed up front as much as some would have. He did sacrifice some of that. Now, you can argue, well, big deal, whoop-de-doo. He's got so much money, why does it matter after a point? Well, it does matter. It allows the Chiefs some flexibility to where they could try to get Orlando Brown, depending on how much they want to pay him. And Mahomes restructure, they'll restructure his deal, and I guarantee you they'll redo his deal. If he continues to play like he is, 5 years from now, the Chiefs, if he wants to decide to hold out and he's led him to a couple more Super Bowls, the Chiefs would be stupid not to get the deal done. Just like the Packers finally realized, we got to get the deal done with Aaron Rodgers. We're not going to let this guy walk. We're not going to make him, we're not going to trade him, so forth and so on. You take care of your best players. Juan Soto is perhaps the best player in Major League Baseball. Why should he accept the 15th highest salary? And by the way, over the next 15 years, you know where he'll probably rank 15 years from now? Which, of course, he won't be as good a player.
He'll be 15th on the list.
He'll be like 100th on the list of how many. Because the salaries go up. The revenues tend to go up. The way things are ascending. Like 2 years from now, right. Juan Soto would be probably the 25th highest paid player. And he's the best player at 25. Another reason why you don't sign it.
If he's willing, if he wants to do the long-term one right now, mm-hmm. I bet it looks something like 12 for 500. I think that $500 million number is something that he and his agent want to be the first one with that $500 million. And so I think it'll be 12, might even be 11 for 500. And I would sign Juan Soto for 11 for 500 right now.
That crazy.
If I had it. Yeah.
That'd be just under $50 million a year. If the Nationals came back or the agent said, "Listen, we're okay with the 15 years, but we want to be the first $500 million contract in baseball." That means they would pay him $35 million a year for $525. Well, he's still the third highest paid player.
I don't either.
So to me, if I'm his agent, I'm sitting there going, give me 8 years. No, maybe not even that. Give me 7 years. Then he'd still be 29 or 30. I still think a 5-year deal, if you believe it, 28, you're still in your prime, healthy wise. Mm-hmm. And you say, I want five for 250. Now, people will say, what the heck? You're giving up $190 million, aren't you?
I have a chance to get it back.
But your chance to get way more than that. Whereas if you lock yourself in here, you've got the guarantee and security, but you're also shorting yourself if you end up being awesome still at the age of 28 or 29. However, you know how this works. Guys can hold out, and they can usually somehow get their way.
Yep.
So that's always still an option for a player as well.
Right.
But if I'm Juan Soto, I take nothing less than $45 million a year.
Yeah, it's interesting because you brought up Steven Strasburg, right? What was he getting paid?
$35 million.
$35 million, and I'm like, what has he done since the World Series?
Nothing. He's been hurt.
He's played in eight. He started eight games in the last 3 years and pitched 31 3/3 of an inning.
So $100 million.
28 strikeouts and 17 walks, and he's making $35 million. And Juan Soto's sitting here. You're gonna pay this guy more than me on my own team, and he's not even. He's made eight starts in the last 3 years.
How many innings did you say?
31 1/3 innings
over the last how many?
Over the last 3 years.
So 31 innings or last 3 years.
He's getting
35 million each year. So 105 divided by 31. Steven Strasburg's making $3.4 million for every inning he's every pitched inning, the last 3 years. Now, does that not blow you away?
He's only one game this year
and
with the injury. So I was just like, I don't think he's done anything since the World Series, and they paid him. And it's like, that's where
guaranteed.
It comes in with the guaranteed money, right? But that's also a point for Juan Soto. Like, you got a guy on the same team here that has started eight games in 3 years and making $35 million. You're going to pay me $29.3 million? Come on.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's insulting, and it's hard to say insulting when you're offered $440 million, but it kind of is.
The only reason I even thought about that is because it stood out, because it's Steven Strasburg's teammate of his, and it's like, how are you going to do that? Like, that don't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. I want to pull up his contract here with Steven Strasburg, see how much more is left on it. Oh, dear Lord. He's getting $35 million. It's all guaranteed money, people, unless he retires. $35 million. This year, $35 million next year when he's 34, $35 million when he's 35, $35 million when he's 36, and $35 million in 2026 when he's 37. Wow.
But Juan, you get 29 for the next 15 years.
Think about this for a second. Here's another reason why it's insulting. I know it's crazy to talk about insulting when you're offered $440 million, but bear with me. So Steven Strasburg signed a seven-year, $245 million contract, all right? If you double that, it's 14 years, $490.
Mm-hmm.
They're offering him $440 over 15. They're not even being anything close to what they did for Strasburg. The only thing is they're giving him 15 instead of 7 years. So that's an insult, too. Mm-hmm. Now, Strasburg, even if he's healthy, he only pitches in 35 to 40 games a year. Soto plays 150 to 160 every year. Everyday player, and he also plays in the field. He's not DH. He might here and there. And he's 23, and Strasburg, when Strasburg signed this contract, by the way, he was 31. Once again, don't give long-term deals to guys that are in their 30s in any sport, except perhaps quarterback.
Yeah. 33 starts the year they won the World Series.
Yes.
And was obviously good that year, but that's the second most in his career. He had 34. So, I mean, even when he's, again,
remember they babied him early?
Yeah, absolutely. They just,
1 year they shut him down for the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
And it didn't work, did it?
No.
Because he still got hurt.
Yeah. And it's just like, we kind of felt like that coming in because he was throwing with so much gas.
Yes.
Like, that arm's not going to hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to teach him to kind of reel it in, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were kind of easing him into it, too. And it's like, man, now you're in the back end of the career. The dude's making $35 million a year and not playing. I mean, he's playing, but
here's a fun exercise. If you're doing this for Soto, what is Ohtani worth?
Well, see, there you could argue. You could almost argue Ohtani. But how old is Ohtani? He's not that old.
He's a little bit. He's...
Yeah, you would have to say Soto and Ohtani, and maybe Trout, are the three best players in the big leagues, and Trout's now older. Ohtani is worth more than Soto.
Yeah, right now, yep.
Ohtani's worth at least $50 million
a year. I was going to say 28, and he's 28.
Okay, so he's a little older.
His current two-year, $8.5 million deal with the Angels expires at the end of the season.
That guy's getting a pay.
1 year of salary arbitration. So he'll have one more year with the Angels for sure, and then a long
he's
term.
He's starting the All-Star. I don't know if it's been announced yet, but he started the All-Star game last year as a pitcher and in the lineup, and he might do it again this year. Did they announce the starting pitchers?
I don't know if they've done
I don't think they have. But Ohtani could be starting for a second straight year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ohtani would be the only guy maybe that's worth more because he actually does both, pitch and but listen to this about Soto. He's 23. He's on a Hall of Fame track. He owns a career 293 batting average. His OPS is 43%. His slash line also has 118 home runs already. And here's a stat that a lot of people look at nowadays. Wins above replacement, 21 wins above replacement in just 2,400 plate appearances in his big league career. That's very, very good. He doesn't qualify for free agency till after the 2024 season. So, meaning that if a team acquires him this deadline, if they trade, because now they say they might entertain trade offers because they think that's their best offer they can put forward to him, then you would get Juan Soto, you trade for him. You obviously, Soto's probably not going to agree to a trade unless you obviously give him the big deal. But he technically is under team control or contract control for three more years. well, this year and the next two, so through 2024. So it's an attractive guy to get, but you're still going to have to get him to a big-term deal to keep him long-term, and he's not going to agree to go play for you if he doesn't get his long-term deal, so that's still part of the equation. But, yeah, so you sit here and you say, you guys are nuts. Of course you take the 440. Well, it sounds weird to say, but it is insulting the money per year they're offering the guy when he's one of the two or three best players in the league, and he's going to be the 15th highest paid player after he signs the big contract. Usually when you sign the big contract, you leap up to when you're number one, two, or three, top five, if not the highest paid, and then 2 years later, you're the fifth highest player.
Yeah.
Like 2 years from now, he'll be the 25th highest paid player.
It's kind of an insulting PR move, too, if you think about it. You're $440 million isn't good enough for you, huh? Well, I guess now we have to trade you. And, you know, we have to trade you because we just can't deal with this guy who thinks he's better than $440 million. Well, your offer is kind of, like we said, in this universe, in the way that this is done, is not a great offer. Plus, the Nationals are known to do some weird things with their contracts. They do a lot of the Bobby Bonilla stuff, what they defer stuff, and which is fine.
Most teams probably do.
Yeah, if you agree on it, that's fine. But maybe you're not into that kind of thing, and you know, you just want to pay.
You're also 31-63 and the worst team in baseball. Mm-hmm. So maybe Soto's like, you know what, trade me to a team that's pretty decent, a city that I like to live in, and now I'll win more World Series instead of one, which he already has a World Series ring, for crying out loud.
And I think this is an opportunity that the Nationals also see. I see some chatter like on who could do this or whatnot.
They said the Mariners could. They got Julio Rodriguez to a big deal and Juan Soto.
It's almost impossible to come up with a player trade that's going to...
Yeah.
But...
You need a ton.
One thing they're going to do is probably put Strasburg or another guy on there that is not playing well. And then if you want Soto, fine. But you have to take this bad contract, and we're just going to start all over.
Nobody's going to take Strasburg's contract. I'll tell you that now.
Baseball doesn't do a lot of that anyway.
No,
you can try to get away with it in basketball.
Whether it works or not, I don't know.
You'd have to have a lot of...
Baseball actually does those kind of things the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to give us cash for that contract that we're taking on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't eat contracts in baseball.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
They don't have to. There's no salary cap. It's like, y'all paid that much... pay him that much. That's not my problem. You gave him that contract.
Quick question before we move on to the British Open and close out the show. We'll go over there and grab that. There was talk somebody put out there. Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout are maybe the two of the top five players for sure when healthy in the big leagues and on the same team, and the Angels are 14 under 500. And somebody pointed this out the other day. He said, shouldn't the Angels maybe just go ahead and trade these two guys? You're not winning with them anyway right now. Trade them in their prime. Mm-hmm. Although Trout, who knows, he's kind of banged up. Trade these guys, and it'd be a great marketing tool for a team that wants them. Obviously, these guys could... you said Ohtani's 28. Trout, I think, is 31.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're 22 and 23 like Juan Soto and Bobby Witt Jr. Go ahead and trade them now and get as much as you can for them, which you should get quite a bit, and then you probably have a better team without those two. And it's kind of weird to say that because you're like, dude, they got two studs. But it's like, I go back to the Jared Allen thing. Remember Jared Allen for the Chiefs? He led the league in sacks, and the Chiefs were 2-14. Like, what good is a top sacker when you don't win anyway? Trade him and get more to build your team and get it corrected to where you win more than two games. You know, he's valuable. Same thing. What's the point of Andrew Benintendi playing every day for the Royals when his contract's going to expire this year and put him in left field? We got guys that can play the outfield. You know, there was one other example I had on the top of my mind here, and now I think I forgot it. But if you've got a guy that if you're not winning anyway, then go ahead. I know what it is. You're on a losing team, but he's your closer.
Mm-hmm.
What good is he? Okay, yay, he saves 30 games and you won 60. He's a top five reliever and he has 30 saves. But what good is it on a team that doesn't have the lead enough and he should have 50 saves? Trade the guy, because closers don't have long shelf lives usually, especially nowadays. They last, you know, 2-3 years in their prime. Look at Wade Davis. He's about, what, 3 years? Holland about 3 or 4 years. So if you don't need a closer on a bad team.
No.
That's why some people have been saying Scott Barlow, that the Royals should trade him. He's been their closer. 16 saves. He can go more than one inning. He's done that multiple times. I don't know how old Scott Barlow is. I've always thought it'd be nice to hold on to Scott Barlow. That's a guy that actually, you know, is actually panned out for them from the minors. Actually, that's a pitcher that's panned out. So now we're going to get rid of him. But it makes sense. I mean, do we really need a closer? And then we definitely don't need to pay a closer a ton of money on a last place team. Makes no sense.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
So does it make sense for Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout and the Angels to just keep going the way they are without trading one of those guys, if not both? Because you're not good with them, and neither one's ever won a playoff game. Mike Trout's never been a part of a playoff win, ever.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's because he's a bad player. He just, you know, bad luck, whatever. But never. One of the best players in baseball is not equated to wins. The Royals didn't have some superstar when they won the World Series, did they?
Yeah. Like, if you're in that organization or a fan of the Angels, right, the sad part is they got off to a pretty good start this year, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they just have this long losing streak that just puts them out of reach. And it's like when you start, what were they, 28-18, I think, something like that?
Something like that.
And then they fire Madden because they had the long losing streak or whatever. And it's like, what? Like, we were there. Like, what happened? And if you're the Angels, right? It's like, what? We were. And now you're at this point, you're like, well, we've been there and nothing happens ever. And then you had the best record in the American League and lose three to the Royals in a wild card, mm-hmm. or the divisional series. And it's just like, man, we feel like we're here. We've got these pieces and I would love to keep them because they are two very important faces in the entire game right now.
Right. Marketable, fans come watch them.
And so it's a tough decision to make. I mean, you want to win, but also you want to maybe attract other guys that are free agents that could come in, and you could win quicker than, you know, a big market. You have money, you can try to win quicker than blowing it up, but you've tried that before.
Yeah.
So you're in a tough situation if you're running that team right now, because if you trade those guys, then your fans are going to be like, oh, we have two of the faces of baseball. And they're not going to, like, some of those casual fans are going to be the same ones that were upset the Chiefs traded Jared Allen, right? Like,
right.
Or something like that happens. And you're like, why'd you trade this guy right now?
Well, Tyreek Hill.
I really like him. Tyreek Hill, yeah. And so, well, you understand that, and, you know, there's going to be different scenarios on why trades happen, but we got to do what's better for the future of the team. And so I would absolutely be entertaining the idea of getting rid of both of them to see if I could get a haul to, you
probably would
build
have
this
to,
and make it better in the future.
And you might have to unload both of them, because if you unload one, then the other one might be very unhappy because they don't want to be a part of a rebuild. But if you're Mike Trout, like, dude, what's going now? Ain't working either.
I feel like Ohtani would be,
I'd be
more okay with
me too.
Doing the rebuild. I think he's a baseball guy, but Trout,
he's 31.
It's like, I got to try to win, and I got to get my money too. And so
he's getting his money.
It's like, if I'm not going to win, you better keep paying me. So it's just like, easy to get that contract off your books. Again, Shohei Ohtani's not getting paid right now, so we just established.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting paid, but he's not getting paid.
Trout's getting $35 million a year, and he's going to turn 31 in a few weeks. He's 30 right now. Scott Barlow, by the way, is 29.
Yeah,
I think some people think Barlow's like 25. He's not. So do you really need a closer on a losing team who's having a really good year this year? Do you really need him on your team when you're last place in your division? In a bad division, you're still last place, and he's 29, going to be 30 in December. Isn't it maybe to go ahead and trade at a market high and trade Scott Barlow right now?
Absolutely.
I would say yes. I think the Royals now...
There's something there. I'd definitely be looking at
it. I think you should be looking at trading Barlow, and you're trading Benintendi, and you probably, with the Witt situation, you might be entertaining that more seriously. And Michael A. Taylor, clearly. I mean, Benintendi and Taylor are the no-brainers. But Barlow, I think, makes a lot of sense, too, when you look at things. I can look at his contract here if it's there. I don't have it here. But I know it's not a – his contract
it's
is not a
issue.
Bad – yeah, which would make him more attractable for other teams in regards to requiring him. He is arbitration eligible. He's only making 2.4 this year.
Yeah, I figured it wouldn't.
So he's arbitration eligible the next 2 years. And so you have technically control. And then unrestricted free agent in 2025. So he'd be a very, very attractive trade pickup for reliever. And teams always need relievers. Playoff teams always need relievers.
Yeah, and even if you don't need a closer, you need
a setup man.
HDH, you need Davis.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And Barlow's done that before.
Yeah. Herrera, Madsen, you need Madsen, right?
Yeah. I mean, Barlow, probably, honestly, he's the second most valuable trading piece they've got after Benintendi. All right, the British Open took place over the weekend. And, yes, once again, we are saying that Juan Soto may have made the right decision turning down $440 million. Now, he gets hurt tomorrow, a career-ending one, then yes, it was a really bad decision. And that's what you got to weigh in life, right? Guarantees versus bet on yourself, things like that. Anyway, British Open, Cameron Smith bet on himself.
Is that going to be the birdie that wins the Claret Jug for Cam Smith? Matches the lowest score to par in major championship history. And just like he did at the Players, Cam Smith put on a putting display of historic significance in this place in the final round.
Cameron Smith shot a 64 yesterday in the final round. I love when golf tournaments are won, not lost. And that tournament yesterday, Rory McIlroy didn't lose it. Mm-hmm. You know, and if anybody thinks he did, listen, he didn't have any atrocious hole. He didn't have a train wreck of a hole. He just couldn't get a birdie the last six, seven holes, whereas Smith rattled off five straight birdies. He got hot at the right time. I mean, the first nine holes, Rory was right there. I mean, he had a three-stroke lead, it was, four-stroke going in, yeah. Three strokes after the front nine. Rory was in good shape, but Cameron Smith just upped his game and made putts, and that's what it comes down to. Is many times with the greatest players in the world, the margin of difference of winning and losing a major is razor thin, and a lot of times it comes down to the putter. Simply that. Avoid a horrible hole and make some putts. Cameron Smith did last night, yesterday, five consecutive birdies, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. The 28-year-old, assertive, aggressive the whole way. That was also what I liked about it. It's his first major championship, finished 20 under par, a stroke ahead of Merrick and Cameron Young, two strokes ahead of Rory McIlroy, who many people want Rory to win, and but a 30 on the back nine. 30 on the back nine. That's winning a tournament. Mm-hmm. Rory didn't lose it. Cameron Smith just went out and took it. And I know a lot of people disappointed Rory didn't get it done. And I know he was disappointed as well. Right there in his own backyard, mm-hmm. How cool that would have been. He's kind of been the face now of the PGA Tour, being outspoken against those that went to live golf. Here's Cameron Smith. Disappointment for McIlroy, but ecstasy for Cameron Smith on winning the British Open.
I don't know. It's unreal, mate. Something that I've dreamt of since I was a kid, growing up playing golf. So to win this and to win it here at St. Andrews is pretty special.
All right. So, did you watch? Watch the last round of the British yesterday?
I caught about the last six or seven holes of it. Okay. And Smith was just on the last part of his hot run. And then I feel for Rory. I mean, yeah. Those are the types of rounds like us weekend warriors just make you want to throw the clubs away. I've had days where I hit the ball all over the place, yeah. And I'm like, that's what weekend warriors do. But there's days when you hit it from tee to green really good, and you just don't make anything, and you end up with about the same score you always have, mm-hmm. And it's just like, I played so much better, I just didn't make anything. Yeah, Rory didn't bogey a hole Sunday, and you know, he said 18 straight two putts, or 18 holes, 18 two putts for Rory. And he missed them, you know, by inches each a few times. Just
listen, I feel his pain.
Yeah,
I played putt-putt golf against my oldest in Kansas City to kill some time, and I have never played worse in my life in miniature golf. And the course wasn't even that hard, and I had about 15 putts to hit right lip, and just would not go in the hole. And so I totally understand the pressure that Rory McIlroy is under. Because I felt the pressure when I'm getting embarrassed, a 15, soon-to-be 16-year-old is waxing me on the putting green. Now, I kicked his butt in top golf, but putting, I couldn't make one. Now, granted, that's miniature golf, whole different deal. But the point is, you have days where you're just off, or you play great. I've had days where I played golf, I drive the ball down the middle, perfect. Like, hot dang! And they can never finish it. Bad approach shot, or bad chip, or a three putt, and I bogey. I'm like, that's the equivalent of me hooking my drive, but I'm still in bounds, and then I make a great putt and save bogey. Like you said, same score, but you walk away going, but I played so much better, but yes. I don't see it reflected on my card. Yes. And I think that's how Rory probably felt yesterday.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Rory Rory played really well.
He did not fall apart.
But just didn't make any putts. And they said there was one graphic, I think it was about hole 14, 15. So they still had a little bit left to go. But it was, if you take the length of distances that Cameron Smith's putts were made and Rory's, it was like 84 feet for Smith to 27 for Rory. Mm-hmm. So Rory's knocking in 1.5 footers mm-hmm. for par. And Smith is draining 18 footers for birdie. And
That's the difference.
That's the difference.
That's the difference. At that level, that's the difference. Well, if you're sick of golf, and if you're sick of baseball, and you're ready for football, I'm going to end the show with the best news that you could ever hear. Just 41 days until the college football season begins.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.